State Board will come back to order. Next item on the agenda is the Commissioner's Report. I believe legislation and legislative report is high on the list.
Yes. Ms. Mello, please take it away.
So the legislative session will constitutionally have to end 4 weeks from today. They may end earlier. I think that's a possibility, so something to keep in mind.
Did you say 4 weeks? Four more weeks?
That's better than 4.5 weeks, which is where we were on Monday. For those of us who are counting, it's 21 days. I was at a meeting earlier this week, and there were some female lobbyists and some male lobbyists, and it was very interesting because all of the female lobbyists were counting the working days, and all the male lobbyists were counting the total days, like including the weekends, and I thought that was an interesting... Some smart person could come up with a great psychological explanation for that, but I'm not that person. So there is a lot going on over there, and I'm going to do my best to not be a little frantic this morning, but just so you know, I'm a little frantic, so hopefully you'll forgive some of that on my part.
Yeah.
We have two new bills that your ledge contacts have asked us to put before you, and new in the sense that we have not discussed them here or in any of our board meetings. The first one is Senate Bill 165. This is a bill by Senators Johnston and Kerr in the Senate, by Representatives Murray and Penniston in the House. What this does is... perhaps more helpful to start by saying what this does not do. This does not delay implementation of Senate Bill 191. This does not, in most people's opinion, undermine Senate Bill 191. What it does is gives districts one more year of flexibility about how much they weight the portion of the teacher's performance rating that is based on the statewide assessments. Did I get that right, Jill? Okay. And Joe, please, do you mind speaking into the mic? Because I want this is a very technical one, and I struggle to continue to get the words right. So please, Jill, why don't you put it in your words?
Sure. So really what the intent of the legislation is to respond to district requests to have another year to practice with the growth side of 191. And the flexibility is... only in the final rating, how much they weight growth. Districts still have to evaluate teachers on professional practice and growth. So teachers would still see what the growth side would look like for them. When those two, where the flexibility comes, is how much weight you put to this side to get your final rating. So they could weight it 30%, 10%, 50% if they're ready to do so.
Or zero
if they chose not to weight that portion.
But just for the 1 year.
A teacher still gets a rating for that standard because that standard is considered standard six. For standard six is the growth standard. They'd still get an individual rating for that standard. They just wouldn't get that weighted for their final evaluation. So it allows for some of that flexibility as districts are figuring out how to address, how to combine multiple measures, how to make sure the multiple measures work well together. And for those districts that want to use current year results for assessments in their evaluation, it gives that year where we won't have current year results because next year with the new assessment we wouldn't have it. It allows them to have some time to incorporate those for the following year.
But it's only for those who choose?
Absolutely, yes. It's not mandatory on districts. It's completely discretionary. It gives those who want some more time to practice the time. If they're ready to go, they can go.
Is the choice at the district level, at the school level, at the teacher level?
At the district level.
Yeah. So for all, should they decide that the growth portion should be 20%, 30%? It's for everyone in that school district.
That's actually a good question. Mm-hmm. Does the legislation specify that they have to use the same measure for all of their professionals?
So, Mr. Chair, no, it doesn't have that level of specificity. I think the guidance that the department would give to, but it's local school boards, so they get to decide. Our guidance would say that we would guide districts and encourage them to choose one weighting. It would just get incredibly complex if they were to do it for different groups of teachers.
So the reason I'm asking this is that if you read the national literature, there certainly are those who acknowledge that student learning growth should be a critical part of a teacher and school's evaluation, but that such and such percentage isn't the right one, that it should be a different percentage. And in fact, states have put different percentages in their individual educator effectiveness laws. So there are states where it's only 30% as opposed to 50%, et cetera. And I'm curious if there's a way that we can learn something about that particular question, what really should be the amount through this 1 year. But I can't figure out how we could collect effectively feedback that this really seemed to be the better percentage as opposed to what's been chosen, probably fairly arbitrarily, as it has been everywhere else. I'm just curious what you think about that, Jill.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So a lot of the research in other states is looking at how much those states are specifically weighting state assessments, the state assessment data.
State assessment.
Correct. And so Colorado has 50% that's multiple measures. And we have never tried to pinpoint what particular weighting needs to be on just the state assessment. And in fact, encourage use of local measures and encourage use of teachers coming together to develop shared measures. So it's closest to their classroom, closest to really what they see they have the impact on in a combination with the state measures. So it's a little bit different because we do have those multiple measures that comprise growth. And it's that piece, it's that flexibility that's in our model that is what districts are really practicing with this year. And I believe that the legislation was an attempt to respond to districts saying we need another year to kind of get that better and cleaner.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions in this area? Please.
Okay. Wait a minute.
You're just trying to get me completely off balance here,
no,
aren't you?
No, I...
Well, let's invite Tony back in, and I'll disclose some more confidential information.
When we had our legislative meeting, Marcia and I talked about bringing this to the board for consideration in terms of taking a position. My understanding is the impetus for this bill is that some districts are ready to go, but other districts need a little bit more time, and that we all think, and the department thinks, that this is a reasonable a bill in terms of allowing them flexibility. So I guess I'd like to put out that this, since we're such strong supporters of 191, and this still honors 191 but gives them a little bit more flexibility to do it right, that we support the bill.
Okay, so my perspective on
and
this.
And I think it's a bipartisan support, is that correct?
Or it does have bipartisan sponsorship, but it has not. There have been people who voted against it going forward when it was in the Senate. So it's not been like everybody has supported the bill.
Who are the sponsors?
The sponsors are Johnson and Kerr in the Senate and Murray and Penniston in the House.
So as I engage the conversation, I don't want to oppose, and I don't just completely disagree with your characterization. I think it does do the best we can do, or potentially. It makes an effort, let me say it that way, it makes an effort to not lose ground on 191 as we're dealing with something I, of course, am uncomfortable with, and that's the burden of PARC, you know, everything, all this complexity that we've now introduced into our lives over these last several years by virtue of kind of rolling things up to a higher level outside the state of Colorado creates this complexity that requires that we make adjustments for things of this nature. And so my point is I'm not objecting to what you're saying. I'm simply saying...
If you understand what he said.
Yeah.
I understood it.
Okay. Fair enough. So I'm not objecting to what you're saying, supportive of this or supportive of the board taking a position on this, but it's the type of complexity that we're creating in our lives by virtue of so many of these top-down, overreaching things that are coming at us from outside the state. So that's my summary.
That said, and I tend to agree, I just was adding
tease you a little bit. I would have no problem with taking a position of support because it does give those districts the flexibility. And there's so much angst out there about carrying this forward. And we're saying to them, yes, if you're ready, go. But if you're not, you can have another year. I think that's very reasonable. So I have no problem with taking a position. Do you want me to make a motion?
Yeah.
I would move that we support the bill.
I second it.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Do we want a roll call, or are we near consensus on this?
We've got Senator Mark Sheffel, in case you want.
Yeah, well, okay, so without objection, we'll take a support position. Next item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the next bill that the legislative contacts have asked me to bring forward, again, They want to ask you to take a position on this potentially, but has to do with supporting innovation.
I'm sorry, say the bill number again.
It's Senate Bill 167.
Thank you.
It has to do with supporting innovation amongst alternative education campuses. So as you all know, I'm sure far better than I, these are schools and campuses that serve some of our kids who have a lot of challenges, who are really struggling for a variety of reasons. This bill creates a pilot project. There's an advisory board that gets named by the department, and then that advisory board works with department folks to make recommendations to you all about how the program should be run in terms of its rules, about who the grant recipient should be. So it does, I think, show a great deal of deference to the role of the State Board of Education in all of this, which is not something we always see in legislation, so I like to point it out when we do see it. Essentially, it sets up this advisory committee. It sets up this pilot program where there will be part of it is they'll give more money to on a per-pupil basis to the kids in these schools to see if, with some additional resources, can we do a better job helping these kids get to where they need to be? It's a one-time appropriation. It's $1.2 million a year for the next several years out of the State Education Fund as the funding mechanism. It makes it clear that those opportunity schools are still subject to accountability requirements, right? So it's not, we're not giving anybody a pass. What we're saying is we're going to provide some extra resources, some extra support through a grant-making process to see if we can find ways to do this better, essentially, and how can we learn from this experience about what we do in this program, and then apply that to other AECs and other schools or campuses or whoever they may be that are serving some of these really high risk populations. So that's in essence what the bill does. It has been heard in the Senate Education Committee. It has not been voted on yet. That vote is happening. Perhaps as we speak, there's all kinds of things happening over the Capitol as we speak. It's scheduled for this morning, and I don't know if they're meeting yet or not.
I think Deborah has a question.
Dr. Sheffel?
Is the goal just to get, it's a grant program that's fairly non-prescriptive, just to get more money per student to students in this category, or is it, what is it designed to do except provide more money?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Sheffel, I wouldn't categorize it that way. I think it is actually fairly descriptive. Mm-hmm. I'll use that word. Maybe that's a neutral word. I don't know. Of what schools in this, who would be participating in this pilot program, the kinds of things we're looking for. It's really designed to be a research tool. I mean, that's, I think, the way to think about it is we're going to do some research around how to work best with these schools, and we're going to do that research via a grant. So, I think you all have the bill in your packet, but I mean, it talks about. I'm just trying to find some of the language here. In recommending applicants to the state board, for example, I'm on page 9 of the bill. The department and the advisory committee shall give priority to applicants that design a program to serve specific segments of the student population, demonstrate a record of achieving academic growth if they've been in operation, present programs that are based on clear design principles that includes student-centered focus in which educational services are designed specifically to meet the needs of individual students, including flexible programming. I'm kind of skimming around here. A college and career readiness focus, a focus on providing wraparound support services. So there are some, I think, specifics included in the legislation that target this particular program to schools that are doing some of this stuff now or that want to do this kind of stuff so that we can learn about the effectiveness of those specific activities like a wraparound focus. Does wraparound work? Is it necessary? I mean, I know nothing about this stuff. Seems to me like if you're dealing with a high-risk population, that's probably a good idea. This is designed to figure out if that actually makes a difference or not.
Pam and then Helene.
It seems to me that I'm not sure what the impetus is of the sponsors, you know, what their motivation is. But from where I sit, I'm wondering, what do we know, what do I know at least, about the status of our alternative education campuses? What kind of innovation is already going on and what their success rate is? This seems like, from my perspective, an awful lot to add right now. I'm a little bit concerned that the focus is on wraparound services, including drug and alcohol testing, mental health, health care. That seems like an awful lot to add to trying to educate students who are in an alternative education campus. That's not a question, by the way.
Oh, okay, great.
Well, unless you have some more information about the motivation behind this bill, is there some concern about the alternative education campuses that came to their attention?
Mr. Chair, yes. I mean, I think that there is within the community there is a concern that we aren't doing a good enough job as a state of figuring out, are these schools effective? Are they doing the right job? What do they need to do the right job? That we haven't had a focus kind of in particular on these schools. They are a part of our accountability system. So, I mean, it's not as if they've been ignored and completely out of the system, but I think it's about trying to say we're going to take a really structured approach. That's how I've heard the legislators describe it. Now, at the Capitol, one of the things that gets you in the biggest trouble is ascribing intent to a legislator. They have big fights about this on the floor.
You saying that's my intent? You're not allowed to say what my intent is.
So I always say is that's how I've heard it described. And Rebecca's here. I mean, I can't speak to the question of what we know already about these schools and how they're operating. And I
ask a question
her on the
before
spot,
that?
But
kind of just tacked on to what Pam has said, ask the commissioner. Because, you know, we have an alternative school in Mesa County, and we went through a thing with it last year. And I mean, do you feel that, or we are, I tend to feel we're doing a good job there already. You would identify them. Do you see an, quite frankly, do you see an advantage to this bill, or do you think we're already there?
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Make sure you don't assign any intent.
That was my question. Do we really need this, or are we already doing a good job with these alternative schools?
No, we're not, quite frankly.
So we could use extra.
Well, I
go
don't
ahead.
Know if this bill addresses that, but because you've all studied it more, but I have not. You know, there are issues either way.
I called my lifeline.
Phone a friend.
Phone a friend,
Mr. Chair. So without deferring this to Keith around around accountability, I think it is directionally true to say that prior to AECs having their own accountability framework, they were consistently at the bottom of the general accountability framework, that these are traditionally secondary schools, though not entirely, who take in students who are very far behind, who qualify as having 95% of their students as at risk or highly at risk in a number of risk factors. Anecdotally, those schools would say they are already trying to provide a great number of wraparound services, but they're serving tough-to-serve kids on the same PPR, and for a long time have argued that that is a pretty fundamental challenge for them. The other issue here, and I'm not sure this bill 100% solves this issue, but AEC support doesn't actually live anywhere in the department. Keith has, I think, one FTE that thinks just about the new accountability framework for AECs. And inside our division, we have the Dropout Prevention Office, which does administer a number of grants, which just by accident or chance are often, but not by design, granted to AECs because, for example, they serve expelled and at-risk students or they serve schools who have very historically low graduation rates. But AECs don't really live in a support place in the department. This grant program doesn't solve that necessarily, but it does give a start toward having a group and a task force who would be taking that issue on over the next 3 years.
Thank you.
And there is a financial part to it. They will pay for it.
It would assign out of the general fund 30% more PPR per student for the schools who were chosen into the grant program in the pilot year per year for 3 years. The grant program does not institute a cap on the number of schools that can be in the grant program, but it does institute a total number of students. So it's 600 students. So 600 students receiving 30% more PPR is where you get to about $1.2 million a year in additional funding to these schools.
Dr. Scheffel.
A window on why it said it shall not be an online school? Does that mean they're not using any online delivery models at all, or do you have a sense of that?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Scheffel, I don't actually know the answer to that question. Supposedly legislation coming on online schools. Remember how I started and said we have 4 weeks? So, I don't mean to say, there's a very sincere effort, I think, to bring forward some legislation around online schools, and it may have simply been like, we're going to try to keep these conversations separate, but I can't tell you for sure.
I'm just a little flummoxed about this simply because we know there are models like, what's it called, the Harlem
Children's Center?
Harlem Children's Center. We know that spending more money per kid to provide wraparound services does make a difference, so we're going to prove this again. It doesn't address, I mean, how does this in any way change that reality that we're already aware of?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Schroeder, and I mean, obviously I'd like Rebecca to weigh in, but I want to make it clear that the providing wraparound services is one of like 12 things that is listed in terms of things, factors we're looking at. So I perhaps misled you when I read through this the way that I did. That's one of many things I think they're trying to evaluate the effectiveness of within the context of AECs.
Yeah, I would add to that. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
That included in that list are work-based educational environments, so the idea of bringing in career and technical education in a more focused way, blended learning. So schools chosen into the pilot would be piloting in a more intentional way a number of practices, that just being one of them.
Okay.
Fair enough. I'd just like to spend a little more time. I'd like to spin up on this. I feel like I'm behind the curve understanding what it's all about. So I'm not in a position to support it, just so people know where I'm at personally.
And I was just on the point of making a monitor motion because I think there are so many questions. Mm-hmm. I would move that we monitor.
Jane, you had your hand up for a long time.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. I would probably just repeat what everybody said. I did listen to the hearing on this in the committee, and it came across to me as an attempt, an intent, to address what we are realizing, again, is high school-centric problems and high school age and older. So, yeah, the idea of wraparound including workforce development tie-ins and things like that. I mean, what I'd want to talk to them more about at some point would be it really will fall back here if it passes is the grant application and what kinds of literal wraparound services and connections these schools, wherever they are, may have already in place or can get, because depending on what that situation is, it makes a lot of difference in how much time they'd have to set back in order to get things ready to have this. So.
So we have a motion. Is there a second? There's a second to monitor from Elaine. So sensing that is the consensus of the board. If there's no opposition, we'll take a monitor position. Next item.
Okay. So we are now moving on to bills that we have discussed in some form or another previously. These are kind of some of the significant pieces of legislation at the Capitol, and I'm just going to provide you an update and happy to answer any questions. We'll start with House Bill 1268. This is the bill, the shorthand title for this was the mutual consent bill, right? This bill was killed on Monday. The sponsor gave his opening remarks and then asked that the committee kill his bill. I think he did that because he knew he didn't have the votes. And instead of going through 2 hours of testimony and gnashing of teeth and all such things. He chose just to get it over with. So the bill is dead.
Dead.
Next item.
The next one is House Bill 1294. This is the Student Data Collection Privacy Protections Bill that we've talked about before. You all do have a support position on this bill, just to remind you. This has been one of those ones that's kind of been sitting around waiting for the budget to finish so that it could get through its Appropriations Committee hearing, scheduled to be in committee on Friday. It actually doesn't have any... there's a fiscal note in the sense that a piece of paper exists that says there's no fiscal impact. So it's a little bit odd that we ended up having to go to appropriations on this bill, but nonetheless, we are going. Since there is no fiscal impact, I anticipate a positive vote out of the Appropriations Committee on Friday, and then we'll go to the House floor, and obviously it still has to work its way through the Senate. This is one of those pieces of legislation. I've worked on a couple of things like this session where, you know, it gets introduced and then lots of people come out of the woodwork with, you know, lots of little kind of, when I say little, I don't mean to suggest that they're not important, but kind of just things you didn't think about, right? You know, it's like, that's an interesting point. So I do anticipate there will be some additional amendments to this bill to kind of address different concerns that have been raised. I want to reiterate that when the bill was first heard in committee, they did that same thing as they had done procedurally on the bill we just discussed, where they heard the bill and then they didn't take the vote that day. They took a vote a later day. And so when there was that gap period of time, there were several amendments prepared that attempted to address some of the concerns raised by the public that testified at the hearing. So, for example, one of the things that came up was the Department of Education should not be able to sell student data. Or allow a commercial entity to use it for commercial purposes. What I'm told is that we would never do such a thing anyway, so that language was added to the bill to make it very clear that we cannot do that. So, and I'm not trying to say that we have done, that the bill's been changed and now everyone loves it and there's this big kumbaya and everyone thinks it's perfect. I think there are still a number of parents who have, you know, concerns about data privacy issues. But I am telling you that so you understand, I think there is an intent to certainly address all the concerns to the extent that we can. So it's a good faith effort. Any questions about that?
Comment. My feedback is the amendments have been improving the bill. A number of the things that have come to the bill have been things we've discussed from this panel previously. So I think that, in fact, we are moving in an improving direction on a bill that we're already supporting. So thanks for the report on that. Next.
The next bill is House Bill 1292, also known as the Student Success Act, and I'm giggling because they literally are debating this right now over at the Capitol. There's been a whole bunch of changes to this since the last time we spoke. Essentially, the bill at this point in time, the bill that they are debating on the House floor, contains $110 million towards reducing the negative factor. It contains some language around fiscal transparency. And it contains funding for charter school capital construction. And that's it. Everything else has been stripped out of the bill at this point. We will see if they keep the fiscal transparency language in there. That'll be a big fight this morning on the floor. And I it's close enough that I can't tell you. I don't know which way that will go. Now, some of the parts that were stripped out of here were intentionally done so they could put them over in the School Finance Act. So you may remember that there was a big focus on English language learners in the introduced version. That is not in this bill anymore, but it's been amended onto the School Finance Act. So it's not that concept is completely gone. The other portion of this bill I should mention that is gone is the average daily membership requirement, the requirement to transition to that system. It was replaced with some language requiring us to do a study. The language they put in that requires the department to do a study, I think, was much more, trying to think of the right word, would require a great deal more work and more attention to detail than they were intending that it do. So when we came back and said, okay, if you want us to do what you're telling us to do here, it's kind of a big deal and it takes a lot of time. And they said, oh, that's not what we meant. So we're in the process of working through some language that, I mean, it's like saying to them, okay, tell us what it is you want and let's find the language that accomplishes that, because the language you've given us doesn't seem to match what you say your intent is. And that's not because anyone's trying to be tricky or foolish or anything like that. It's because these things get written and voted on within, like, the course of 2 hours and mistakes get made.
So didn't we already have a summer study group that was about exactly this topic a couple of years ago.
It was a while ago.
Well, it's been longer than
It's been longer than that.
I think it was 2009, if I remember right. It was an interim, legislative interim committee study. And I would ask the commissioner and all of you and maybe Leanne if you have a read on how this the bill language proposed is, how is it different? Is it an enhanced list of things that were addressed in that original report? So, you know, it is 5 years, which is considerable length of time, but I'm curious, when I saw that they proposed this study, I thought, well, maybe we've already accomplished some of that.
Mr. Chair, and I want Leanne to weigh in, but to be clear, it's not. It didn't say go study ADM. It said go study attendance systems, mm-hmm. right? So that's bigger than ADM, right? ADM is you go from one count date to this average daily membership concept. That's a little different than talking about an attendance system, you know, tracking attendance essentially at the state level. Or I mean, and we would obviously work with districts on that because we would have to. But just to be clear about that, and I'll let Leanne weigh in.
Thank you. Yes, this study as written in the language right now is very different than the average daily membership study. And they would like us to, under this current concept, study the feasibility, design, and cost of creating a statewide system for collecting counts, and then also compare that to not only a statewide enrollment system, but also how it's currently being collected and what it could be looked at instead of them pushing data to us, but a pulse system. So a couple of different ways to look at that versus just looking at average daily membership.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Please.
It also opens up the issue of the statewide student information system that many superintendents have talked about now, because mm-hmm. we have every district has their own student information system. I mean, understand the privacy issues and all that it raises, but the discussion around that, if the state ever did that, and some states have that there's really not a need for student information systems at a district level unless they particularly want to keep their own, because everything would be housed at the state, and then they don't have to submit reports like they used to. It'll be automatically pulled. You know, you have to work through other issues, I understand, the privacy, but there is some of that discussion now, because some of the superintendents are really talking about that as a burden relief. That'd be a significant burden relief from them if the state were able to do such a system.
So are you suggesting that this would be part of?
I don't know. I mean, there's still the devil's in the detail, but I mean, that could lead to something from this study. I don't know, because it's getting very close to that when you're starting to get in that domain of other information, okay?
That would be fantastic.
Well, and if I may,
go ahead.
I mean, I would argue that the existing mm-hmm. language that we're looking at right now that's in the bill probably does lead to that. Again, what they are telling me they meant to write is not that.
Right.
So it's a work in progress. We will report back when we have additional information. Okay. It's a lot of hurry up. We need that right now. Oh, never mind. Right, Leanne?
Yes.
Leanne and I had quite a few fire drills yesterday afternoon.
Other thoughts, or should we move on?
Anything else on the student success or school?
No, I mean, it's, you
early
know.
Early childhood?
There are some early childhood. There's an additional e-care slots in the School Finance Act.
Do you know how many?
I believe it's 5,000.
Mm-hmm. How much are we short?
Excuse me?
How much are we short?
Short what?
How many slots are we short for free and reduced lunch kids?
Mr. Chair, Dr. I can't answer that question. I'm not sure I understand.
I'm not sure off the top of my head either.
It would help to know what it is that we seek.
Mm-hmm. We can certainly look back. I think we've provided some of that information to the Joint Budget Committee in the past as to what the what the total eligible
population is.
Population for free for students without risk factors would look like.
Right. Would help to look at that and share that again. Thank you.
Okay. Sounds like my lifelines will follow up.
Okay, that's it. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Doesn't really happen this time of year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Leanne, are you ready?
Yes.
Turn over to Leanne and give you an update on the recent revenue forecast and what's also happening.
Sure. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the revenue forecast. I'd rather go into what total program might look like if 1298 and 1292 passed. So you had received some information from me regarding a run that looked like this. It was a spreadsheet that had blue on it. And
I still couldn't read, even with my magnifying ruler.
I apologize. I know it's little print. And I believe that you also received a fact sheet on total program, and hopefully this helped boil down some of the large brochure of understanding school finance. And I'd like to open it if anybody had any questions, first of all, on the fact sheet and how that was derived.
Hi, Tim. Yeah.
Ma'am, go ahead.
This was really helpful. Thank you very much. The formula per pupil funding, though, it says amount determined by adjusting base per pupil funding by factors that differentiate a district's demographic characteristics. Can you tell me what that factors that differentiate, is that different than the free and reduced lunch, English language?
Those, when you take all of those factors together, those really differentiate and help help the per pupil funding in that district. So you look at the cost of living in the district, you look at their free and reduced lunches and all of that. But let me back up. Free and reduced lunch do not affect that base per pupil funding adjustment. That per pupil, it's really the cost of living, the personnel and non-personnel, and the size of the districts that attempt to capture the demographic information within that particular district. And so once those factors are applied to the base per pupil, that gives you your formula per pupil funding.
Okay. So the formula per pupil funding actually encompasses the cost of living?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not necessarily a separate part of the formula. It encompasses?
Well, it is in that if you looked on the second part of the page, on the back of the page, and in the second section here of this gray, with these gray bars here, that's really where you take your base and you apply those factors. So you apply cost of living, personnel, and size. And that formula there gives you a specific formula per pupil funding for every district within the state.
I think we're saying the same thing different ways.
Okay.
So the formula per pupil funding, that's what that is those. Okay.
Yes. And then once that's determined, then you go through the next level of adjustments.
Yeah, so I don't get the personnel and non-personnel costs. I don't. Is it a ratio?
That one is it's an attempt to. It's an attempt to measure or recognize, I should rather say recognize, that the personnel costs within a particular district is going to eat up
much more of their budget than another district. So normally what happens is when you get into larger districts, Jeffco, Denver, places like that, their per pupil funding is much closer to the statewide average. So therefore, their personnel costs are going to eat up a larger percentage of that per pupil funding than, say, a smaller district that has a large per pupil funding. And so their personnel costs are not as high of a percentage
relative
to another district. So that attempts to recognize that difference there.
By reducing what they get?
Well,
I mean, I'm trying to understand the rationale. It seems to me that it's a local decision whether they have a high level of personnel, overall personnel costs, or do not.
It is, but it's then how it's calculated in the formula.
But why?
But cost of living. I mean, if you're living,
I'm not talking about cost of living. I'm talking about the cost.
If you have to pay more to teachers because in your district they won't work for you unless they make so much money. On the other hand, if they're in another district where, you know, the cost of living is less, because correct me if I'm wrong. Are we talking about the famous J curve here?
The
J curve has changed a little bit, but that's what we always referred to when I was on the local board, was the J curve, which has a great it has all those elements in it, but size was the overwhelming, it seems to be the overwhelming. The bigger districts and the smaller districts get the most money, the middle districts get, you know, the lowest average, and then the big districts, again, go back up because of their, it's not as efficient to have that big a district.
I thought that's the cost of living piece.
Well, it is.
Thank you.
And I'm talking about something else that she has here, which is the personnel and non-personnel costs, which reduces the amount.
You mean the difference between what is personnel and what is non-personnel cost?
Yeah, a decision that a district makes as to whatever money they get, including the cost of living adjustment, how they allocate that money. And I don't get why there is an adjustment to the formula for that.
Thank you. You know, and I apologize. I do not know the actual rationale behind why they put that factor into the formula. However, but it was an attempt. I do know that it was an attempt to say those with smaller
payrolls.
Payrolls, but smaller per pupil fundings.
Right.
Their personnel eats up more of that per pupil funding than a district with a larger per pupil funding, and their personnel costs eat up less of that. So it was an attempt to measure between non-personnel and personnel to somewhat equalize those across the districts. And you know, in the parentheses, that's where they are applying those factors. And then one other clarification for Marcia. You're right that the size was the J curve. And it's no longer a J curve.
No,
it's
now
an
it's an L.
Yeah. Now it's the L.
When they changed it. Because, right. See, I come from one of those districts who was very fond of saying we're on the bottom of the J curve. And we used to argue with Pueblo because we got a dollar more, or they got a dollar or something. You know, it's like, no, we're the lowest.
So going back to this personnel thing, has anybody looked at it to determine whether, in fact, the scenario you described, that smaller districts, it's a larger percentage, is in fact the reality in the spending of the districts? Because it seems to me that there's an incentive here to spend as much on personnel as possible in order to get more PPOR.
Okay. Thank you. And actually, there is no correlation between what the districts actually spend on personnel versus what the formula gives you.
Oh, holy cow. Now I'm totally confused.
Yeah, there is no looking at actual expenditures on personnel compared to what the formula would say you're spending.
It's much like the cost of living factor in here. They're very complex internally. They've been with the Act, if I'm right, this has been there since 1988.
That's right, and they've fiddled with it, but they haven't really changed it that
much. So, Leanne, I know that right now is no time to be asking for anything, but at some point, I would like to understand this, because the rationale is not going into my brain at all.
Because there's a methodology formula beneath them.
Yeah, I get formulas, but formulas should have some reasonable assumptions and expectations and objectives, and I don't get what this objective is, because it actually... If your example is correct, it reduces the amount you get, right? At least in your example, it's personnel cost 90.50%. So I just want to figure this out.
Sure.
And this is not the time to ask you. I know that.
Okay.
Suffice it to say, Angelica, that you are not the only person who is
They've been
confused.
Doing
I'm
this
not
for
sure
20
that anybody
years.
Completely understands. This is the word picture that I have is you build a house, and then because you need to, your family expands, you add up a house or a lean-to on the side, and then you build another room on the side of the lean-to. And over the years, we've created this incredible labyrinth that is so complicated that it may or may not be serving the purposes we seek well. That's an entire different conversation.
I think it would be appropriate for us to study it.
I don't. Sorry.
Because
but you're an accountant.
Well, I know, but we're the ones that distribute the money.
It is key. Yeah,
I agree with you.
I agree it's important and we should be looking into it more
make
carefully.
Make sure that what we're doing is what we want to be doing.
But what are they going to... I'm sorry, Angelica, but if we decided that we didn't like that, what do you think they'd do about it?
Well,
listen,
if we can make
carefully.
A good case, and if we can understand it enough to be able to explain it to them, because I would predict that not all of them get it either. I'm sorry for being a numbers person, but it's money for kids. We shouldn't just blow it on.
You're absolutely correct.
You're
agree. Show me the money. Jane had a question or comment, and
well,
I have a gavel.
Question asking for confirmation, probably. Within the personnel bucket, is para in there? Now, the state requirement, the requirement on districts is, I'm not sure what the percentage is, and I know it's gone up by a little less than 1% or something this year. The district contribution to para, is that all taken into account in the total pot of personnel costs? The percent, again, it's the percent is state requirement percent of district's contribution is the same across the state. But when we're talking about varying numbers of personnel that fall under para, isn't that typically considered in the big pot of personnel costs for school districts?
Thank you. Again, there is... really no correlation between what's actually paid out in districts for personnel with para, salaries, and all of that, and how the formula distributes
the money. Right.
So one would assume that when the formula was built, and this piece of the formula has not changed since, as far as I can remember, back to 1995. It hasn't changed. But you would assume that it would have been factored in at that point in time that it was written, that the full cost, fully loaded costs of salaries and bennies were considered in developing that portion of the formula.
Okay.
We would think.
Are there questions in this at this juncture? No. Leanne?
Okay, thank you. So, anyway, I'm glad you found this helpful.
We'll
do a little more studying on personnel. The other thing that I wanted to hand out is an updated version of the spreadsheet that you all had, and I apologize for the small print. But some people will be very happy to see this out in the districts. And what this is it's an updated version that incorporates both 1292 and 1298. So in House Bill 1292, there's a buy-down of the negative factor of $110 million over what is currently in the School Finance Act at 1298. So what this spreadsheet illustrates, and we'll be posting this up later today, are the House appropriation amendments that took place yesterday. So if we just, I'm going to start on page 4. And what this illustrates is the 2013-14 total program funding. So your first column here is the actual funded pupil counts. Your next column over is the total program if it was fully funded without the negative factor. The next column over is with the supplemental appropriation that was funded. Column F is the negative factor. It's a little over $1 billion, $1.4 billion. Then you have the split between property taxes, SO, and then the state share with supplemental. And then you can see your per pupil funding with supplemental. So that's the blue, that's 13-14. If you go over to the orange color and flip back to page 8, you'll see the same thing. You have your estimated funded pupil counts. This does include the additional 5,000 e-care slots.
What's that?
The preschool.
Early high school.
Yeah,
okay,
preschool. Then your total, your funded total program, if it was fully funded, then you'll see over there the estimated negative factor, which goes down to $894 million. So there's that buy down of $110 million between this year and next year. Okay? So that's a pretty significant increase. Then the next column over is O, and that would be your total program after the negative factor. So you take your fully funded total program minus negative factor, and you get what they would, what districts would actually receive if everything stayed the same through the end of the session. Then you have your split between property taxes, specific ownership, and state share, and your new per pupil funding. Then on the very last page, on the gray page, this illustrates by district those changes. So you can see there's 14,000 additional funded students. The change in total program fully funded to cover inflation and growth would be $296 million. Then that, again, there's that change in the negative factor of $110 million. So you can see that those two together, that funding growth and inflation and buying down the negative factor, increases funding for schools by a little over $400 million. And then you can see that split. Property taxes would go, are projected to go up by about $36 million. SO specific ownership taxes up about $4 million. So the state share would increase by $365 million. And the change in per pupil funding would go up on a statewide average by $368. And that's under the current scenario of 1292 passing and 1298 passing.
So since we, our properties were not reassessed recently, how do we get the higher revenues from property taxes?
Thank you. There's legislative council estimates the changes in property values. There could be new construction, there could be new wells that are drilled, things like that, which could impact your property values in any given county. And it's an estimate.
Is this the year that we get reassessed?
2015 will be a reassessment year.
So any increases then won't come in until 2016, right?
Correct.
So how do we get it into 2014-15? How do we get the increase? Oh, you're just saying
new construction.
Just the new stuff.
Correct.
So you can reassess a property as a result of wells?
As far as I am aware, yes, you can.
Thank you.
Okay. Clear understanding? No questions?
We're deep in the weeds.
Yes, and I apologize.
No, it's not your fault. Those weeds are there.
The weeds are there, and they explain the big picture sometimes.
Leanne, I think you should do a webinar that is permanently on the CDE site explaining how the funding is done, because I would probably go back to it over and over and over again, and it would be really good for parents, too. I make a motion that we
in the middle of the night we'll look at the
I'll see what I can do.
That sounded a little shaky, didn't it?
Well, first just answer my question to make that one understandable.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you.
We can use an animated chalkboard. That would help, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Sir Ken Robinson.
Mm-hmm. Is that the end of the report?
Unless there's any other questions.
Oh, we'll see if we can take them all. I'm bad today. Yeah.
Thank you. Anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leanne.
Thank you. Is that legacy?
All right. I think we'll just take a brief break because we have a timed item, and we actually have time before the timed item.
We actually have time before the timed item. Yes, very good.
Take a 10-minute break.
Okay.